From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. News broke on Wednesday that the Justice Department has made the case to federal prosecutors that it can send armed federal agents to vote counting centers by law. Three people who saw a message to that effect described it to the New York Times. The paper explained that there is, quote, a law that prohibits the stationing of armed federal officers at polls on election day. But a top official told prosecutors that the department interpreted the statute to mean that they could send armed federal officers to polling stations and locations where ballots were being counted anytime after that. My guest is Norman Solomon, co-founder and national coordinator of RootsAction.org. His books include War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. He's a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back, Norman.
Thanks, Sonali.
So it's been quite a week, and ahead of this election day, there were many fears of violence. There were many fears around active efforts to sabotage the vote. Overall, though, election day went fairly smoothly. Did it go better than you had hoped?
Well, it went better than I hoped in the sense that people were able to organize very effectively at the grassroots. I think that has made a big difference. And most of all, I think it was the vote count, because we're dealing in the Trump administration with people who are completely unscrupulous, and they'll exploit any perceived or real advantage they have. So I think it's all come down at this point, especially, to who had the votes. And if the election were even closer, then a lot of issues like the feds intervening with armed guards and so forth would become more crucial.
Let's talk about what the New York Times reported. This seems to be such a typical Bill Barr type approach to the law. So there's a law that says you can't have armed federal law enforcement officers when people are voting or, you know, on election day. And so the Justice Department under Bill Barr has said, well, after Election Day, at those same centers, it's clearly okay. Given Bill Barr's clear siding with the president time after time during his tenure as Attorney General, we should be pretty scared of this, right?
Yeah, well, for the last 46 months or so, since Trump came to office, we've been in a situation where the authoritarian impulses have more and more held sway. And I think we have now a administration that will pull out all the stops to get its way. And it's really a matter of whether they can get away with anything. That really, I think, spotlights what has been at stake with this election, because the possibility of a second term in many ways was too horrible to contemplate. Even the minimal restraints that have existed over the so-called Justice Department under Barr, in the White House under Trump, the entire executive branch and their co-conspirators, you might say, running the Senate and so forth, increasingly in the courts, all of that added up to, whether you want to call it neo-fascist momentum or whatever, the reality that just the basic tenets of partial democracy that we have in this country have been under threat. And I think we really, in a sense, have dodged a political bullet if, as it now seems, Trump has been defeated.
And we know that this administration will skirt the law when it comes to using federal armed agents, as they've done in cities that have been protesting with the Black Lives Matter movement, in Portland and Seattle and many other cities around the country. Earlier this year, armed federal agents were sent in. If Barr is now attempting to make the case, he hasn't yet actually sent agents in, but he was attempting to make the case that it's legal for him to do so, telling federal prosecutors to prepare for this possibility. It's quite terrifying. Attorney General Maura Healey of Massachusetts said, elections are a state matter, and we have authority as state officials over anyone trying to enter locations where ballots are being counted. Anything else is a radical reinterpretation of the law. States can handle elections, and we will ensure the people decide the outcome. I mean, this is setting up for this battle between states, state authorities and the federal authorities, it's amazing to see a Republican administration, you know, from a party where states' rights are something that they have upheld detrimentally often, to, you know, have federal agents and the threat of them interstates. And, you know, this somehow isn't being seen as an infringement on states' rights.
Well, you know, states' rights has always been manipulated by the right to try to attack human rights. So it was invoked during the civil rights movement and still whenever convenient for the right wing to try to suppress human rights whenever the state governments are trying to do so. But then they flip over when it's something like state legalization of marijuana and try to prevent and intervene and stop that. I think what you're talking about, Sonali, is really a clear domestic law, so-called enforcement instance of why Noam Chomsky has called the Republican Party the most dangerous organization in the history of the world. And when you look at the context, for instance, of climate change as an existential threat to the planet and humanity, that's one instance. And then domestic repression, which has had so many manifestations, you referred to a couple of them, but across the board, this is an impulse that has been satisfied and implemented time and again by this Trump administration. And we have a challenge now, I think, to roll that back, not only through what happens in the executive branch after Trump is no longer president, but what activism can do across this country, because a lot of what's in place will be difficult to unravel and roll back because of Congress being what it is, the courts now being what they are. And we're going to have to organize more effectively at the state and local levels, as well as nationally, as progressive activists who don't want to and must not be passive at this historical juncture.
There was a fear ahead of the election that Trump would even, you know, potentially call up members of the military and the National Guard. There are lawyers with the National Lawyers Guild that have set aside lawyers and attorneys to help give legal advice to members of the military who might realize that, you know, they made an oath to the Constitution, not the president. And I know that your organization, rootsaction.org, recently had a petition that more than 15,000 people signed urging U.S. military leaders to refuse an order to interfere in the U.S. election. It seems so strange to talk about this sort of thing happening here in the U.S. Usually it's the U.S. making these sorts of things happen in other countries.
Yes, it's sort of the domestic implementation, perhaps, of what the U.S. has supported, and far worse in many other countries over the decades through CIA intervention and so forth. I think this underscores just how important grassroots work is, because people whose names we don't know, many, many thousands and really hundreds of thousands of people, often young and people of color, have made the difference in this election. And while if you look at cable TV, such as CNN and MSNBC, not right-wing media I'm talking about, but supposedly liberal centrist media, in the last many days, they don't allow progressives on. Hmm. They have a lot of former or present Republicans who've turned against Trump, and that's the apple of the eye of corporate media. So the best we can do is sort of like former progressives, former leftists like Van Jones, who are on CNN, who don't defend or advocate for the left. And this is where the realities of pivotal vote totals in states like Wisconsin, like Michigan, like Arizona, ones that the Vote Trump Out project of rootsaction.org, states where we've been immersed in months working with local people, the march from Kenosha to Milwaukee that happened a couple of weeks ago for voting rights led by African Americans. These were a few examples of massive outpouring of work done by people who, as I say, will never have their name in the newspapers. They'll never be on television. They've made the difference, not because they or we love Joe Biden, not because we have illusions about who he is as somebody who has continued to serve the military-industrial complex in corporate America, but because we recognized the tremendous threat that has already taken such a toll in so many ways from the Trump regime. And we're at a turning point now. And having, it looks like, achieved the almost existential goal of removing the Trump regime from power as of next January 20th, we now have the other part of the task. And that is to also fight the corporate Democrats who have refused to acknowledge the climate crisis, the income inequality, the way in which our entire so-called judicial justice system has been racist, from police encounters to the prison system. And we can go on and on. So the challenge now, it's a better terrain to fight on, but progressives are going to need to fight the Biden administration as well as continue to organize against the far right, which, of course, is not going away, and they will be a tremendous danger and threat and do tremendous damage as the months and years come up.
Norman, one of the interesting anomalies on Election Day was Florida, a state that voted to increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour, which is the direct result of progressive organizing demands for years from the Fight for 15 groups. And yet it was a state that voted for President Trump quite strongly. And I'm wondering, picking up on what you were saying around organizing, how important it is for us to not just battle the establishment Democratic Party that keeps out, left voices, but also to have a broader organizing in the American electorate at large. Because the fact is that 60 plus million Americans once more voted for Donald Trump, because in their minds, they see him as making promises around economic betterment that are more believable than whatever the Democrats are or aren't saying. And rather than get into whether the Democrats are your friend or not, how important is it for there to be this grassroots organizing around economic injustice and, trying to undo the damage that Fox News and the Trumpers have done around socialism as a bogeyman? Because the Floridians saw Biden as a socialist, even though he kept denouncing socialism.
Oh, the Republicans always call any Democrat running for president a socialist, whether it's Bill Clinton, no matter how preposterous it is. I think of it sometimes as a lake where the water at different levels is moving in different directions. As you say, there are real achievements at state level in Florida and elsewhere, because people rolled up their sleeves, progressives built alliances, got measures passed via resolutions and ballot measures that change the law. And yet there's always the fight. For instance, Florida a couple of years ago had a referendum that gave the right to vote, restored the right to vote for felons. And yet you have this really extreme right-wing governor teaming up with other power centers in the state to essentially block what people voted for.
And then on the flip side, in California, which voted overwhelmingly for Biden, voters picked Uber and Lyft over workers in Prop 22.
And also Prop 21, in which the rights of cities to impose justified rent control was prevented. A good initiative was prevented by just big money, and this is people power versus money power across the country. Whether it's referendums, whether it's elections, and I think one of the takeaways has to be how important elections are for progressives. It's not everything, obviously. There's a tremendous amount of other avenues in the streets, organizing, strengthening and building unions, all sorts of organizations and political culture that progressives need to be creating and sustaining and building. At the same time, elections are essential for pushing the right wing out of state power and enacting more progressive capacities, laws, enforcement, and so forth, services and funding, budget priorities through state, federal, and local governments. I think you know, there's been an argument, and I'm sure there still would be to some extent on the left, for decades over how important are elections and how do you get it done and the Democratic Party and so forth. I think for the most part, for progressives, that argument is pretty much over. When you look at people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, coming into Congress now, Cori Bush, Jamal Bowman, and others, the squad doubling and more in size, that's a result of people, although we'd rather not, working in Democratic primaries when we talk about federal offices, state offices, where there are partisan races that are unavoidable. There are partisan designations on the level. And if Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had chosen not to run through Democratic primaries, she'd still be tending bar rather than being one of the major leaders of progressives in this country through being in Congress. So looking ahead, I think it's a multifaceted movement that we're building that recognizes to stop the right and to enact progressive power, we've got to grab the electoral bull by the horns and really fight like hell in that terrain as we do in every other.
There's also the issue of healthcare. Bernie Sanders has raised it in recent days. It was a big issue in the primaries. And then, you know, during the pandemic, when we expected that it would become an even bigger issue, it has now sort of slipped out of the public eye. But a Fox News exit poll that Sanders posted to Twitter showed that 72% of respondents said that the government should run healthcare in the United States. This is a Fox News exit poll on Election Day about healthcare. Even though the media aren't covering it, healthcare continues to be a huge issue for voters. And this is one where there's still so much potential for grassroots organizing in the years going forward, right?
Yeah, it's so crucial, even without COVID, which has been pushed off the front pages in the last week or so because of the election, even without this horrendous pandemic that has been made so much worse by the Trump administration and the structures of corporate power over medicine and healthcare, we have just this underlying basic reality that unfair, unjust, and deadly provisions of healthcare are the norm. They're status quo. They're taken for granted. And this is a built-in system of death, you might say, of the healthcare non-system. We don't have a public health system or public health apparatus in this country anymore, as Robert Reich and others have pointed out. So we have this opportunity now to refocus on healthcare because the status quo is simply deadly.
Norman, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Always a pleasure to have you on. And let's certainly keep our eye on both the vote counts and the movements that are working to preserve them and expand organizing in the months and years to come. Thanks so much, Norman.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Norman Solomon. He's the co-founder and national coordinator of RootsAction.org, author of numerous books, including War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death, and a frequent guest here on our program. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.